Actually, I'm gonna tell a story as well while we're waiting for Jen's gonna go around and collect the ballots. So I'm gonna tell one more. When I was 10 years old, my dad was leaving for work really early one morning. It was during a thunderstorm, and my family, we were all in what we called the family room. It was our den. My mom was near the kitchen, and my older brother Brett, he was near the front window. And my baby brother was in the playpen, and I was kind of near the back, near the table. And then there was this incredibly bright flash of lightning, and simultaneously this horrendous, huge boom of thunder. And we heard this horrific scream, this agonizing human scream. And my brother and my mom ran outside, and I ran outside. And my dad was lying in the grass beside the driveway. And his black umbrella was open. It was about 12 feet away in the front yard. And then there was this chaos. My mom ran next door to get Mr. Anderson, and a car pulled up with Mrs. Burris, who was my carpool. And the adults picked up my dad and put him in the back of this hatchback. And my mom got in the back, and they drove away slowly along this road that swept out towards the front of our house. And she was in the back leaning over him to shelter him. And this, I'm thinking, this is great because now I'm going to get to visit him in the hospital. And my older brother had been to the hospital to have his tonsils out, but I had never been to the hospital before. I'm very excited. And this is in keeping with our theme tonight, sort of, I guess, our sort of redneck theme, I think. This is upstate South Carolina. It's a small town. So within half an hour or something, there are these neighbors and their relatives, all these people from our church that have shown up at our house. And they're in the kitchen, and they bring food. And then they're kind of milling in the family room as well. And I go into my older brother's room, Brett, and I ask Brett, and he says that that dad will be fine because he was grounded. And electricity can't hurt you if you're grounded. And he was 12, so he was sort of an expert to me. And he also had an Erector set, which made him even more of an expert on things. And I went back into the living room, and for some reason in this crowded house, no one happened to be in there. So I sat down, it was kind of dark, the lights weren't on, and outside there was a picture window. You know, I remember how gray it was with the sky overcast. And a car pulled up, and my mom got out. And so I run out and up to her, and I said, "How's Dad, and when are we going to get to visit him in the hospital?" And she just put her hand around me, and she didn't say anything. And she started walking me back to the house, and that's when I knew he was dead. And 3 years later, we moved to Charlottesville. And 10 years after that, I had a house. Oh, 20 years, I'm sorry. 20 years after that, I had a house in Belmont. And a couple years after that, my baby brother, now grown up, gone to college, graduated from college, been in Boston for a year, he came to live with me in my house. And he was going to help me pay mortgage, and he didn't know what to do next, so he was going to try to figure out where he was going next while I was staying there. My brother is sometimes named Ben. He has different names. I say sometimes because he never really liked the name Ben, so he changes his name. But I don't think he's ever been able to settle in any of the replacement names, so he keeps changing it. And he also has this mischievous streak. He's kind of sneaky. So once I found out, he springs these name changes on you in surprising ways. Once I found out this way, I was at his house, and he said, "Oh, by the way, I got interviewed in the newspaper." And he shows me this newspaper. I pick it up, and there he is with a different name. That's how I found out. And he's got this sort of a sneaky look in his eye while he's handing it to me, you know, like this. So anyway, when he was staying with me at the house, we would sit on the front porch back then, and we would both chain smoke, because that's what we did, and we would tell stories. And since he was 6 months old when his dad died, I would sometimes tell him stories about his dad. And once I told him the story that I just told you, the story about him dying. And when I told him this, because I told the story a lot, one thing nice about having your dad die in a violent or horrible way is it's easy, people are interested in it, and it's easy to share it, so it's easier to get over it than if they had been died by, you know, if your dad dies, like, getting electrocuted while he's masturbating or something, you're not going to, it's going to be hard to get over. But when it's something like, you know, horrible, but in an open way that people are allowed to share, like being struck by lightning, everyone's interested. So I was sharing this with him. And I realized that in the middle of the story, I disappear. And I thought about that, how in the middle of the story, we all run outside, and then there was nothing about me, and I'd always told the story that way. And I realized the reason I told the story that way is how ashamed I was. And I was ashamed because I hadn't done anything. You know, all the adults were doing stuff. I didn't do anything. My dad is lying there, like 10 feet away on the ground. I remember me standing there and our eyes meeting, and that look of him sort of disappearing almost, and I didn't do anything. I didn't run up to him. I didn't console him. I just stood there like as a 10-year-old with my mouth open. There wasn't any of that kind of like, dramatic sort of like, dearest Father, do not forsake us. Do not abandon us to our fate. We who love you, hold on, hold on. Son, although I may be passing now into the celestial great beyond, know that my spirit will always be with you to comfort you and guide you. It wasn't like that at all. Instead, it was a 10-year-old with his mouth open. So this man, who was a wonderful person, the last sight, one of his last sights on earth, was me standing there going, looking at him like he was horrible. And I always felt so ashamed. And he was a good man. And I knew he understood and he would forgive me for that. But somehow I wanted him to know that I knew that he would forgive me for that. When I'm telling my brother this story, I realize all this and I share it with him. And my brother, later on, a couple months later, did figure out what he wanted to do next with his life. He met a woman who graduated from UVA, and they fell in love, and he went down to Georgia to meet her family. That's where they were from. And while he was gone, I had this lucid dream. It's the only time I've ever had what they call lucid dreams. And I was asleep on the couch in the afternoon, which I do a lot because I'm lazy. So I'm sleeping on this couch, and I have this incredible, vivid dream in which I'm asleep on the couch. And everything's exactly like it really is, except my dad is there. And he floats up, and he's standing there at the foot of the bed, and he says, I know. And I said, and it was kind of awkward, but I said, I know, but I just want you to know that I know that you know. And he said, I know. And that was the dream. That was it. And a few days later, about a week later, my brother comes back, and we're sitting on the front porch and was chain smoking, and he's telling me about his trip, and he mentions that on the way to Georgia he actually stopped in that small town because he hadn't been there hardly at all since he was born there, and just to check it out. And I said, that's interesting, because I just had this dream, and I told him the dream, the same dream I just told all of you. And he gets that sneaky look in his eye, and he says, what day did that happen? And I said, it was Thursday. And he says, yes, Thursday, actually I went to the town, and we found where the graveyard was, and I found the grave, and I knelt down there, and I asked Dad to let you know that he'd forgiven you. Thanks, everybody. Merry Christmas.